The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You're tuned in to The Last Radio Show.
Hello and welcome to The Last Radio Show. I'm John Lynch.
I'm Jen Riley.
And this is a show where we talk about all kinds of stuff. We talk about news, history, pop culture. Today we're going to talk about music.
All right.
We've talked about some different bands. We talked about the Beach Boys. We talked about Ozzy Osbourne.
Yeah, and I feel like you're always schooling me, and this is going to be another one, I think.
Okay, well, we are going to talk about Pink Floyd.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're going to talk about the dark side of Pink Floyd. Now, that's a little play on words, because the Dark Side of the Moon, of course, would be their big album that most people know from Pink Floyd. But we're going to talk about some of the behind-the-scenes stuff with the band. Now, if you were making a list of the top 10 bands of all time, most people's list would probably have Pink Floyd in there someplace.
Sure.
And pretty high on that list, probably. You know, just maybe a notch below, like, the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and some of those bands. But somewhere in the middle of the top 10, you're probably going to see Pink Floyd on a lot of lists.
For sure.
And, of course, you know, one of the biggest bands of all time. And they sold, you know, like 250 million records and had all kinds of...
Yeah, I forget how they were named. Do you know how they got their name?
Oh, we'll get there.
I'm jumping the gun here.
Yep. So I'll give you a little bit of background of the band, a little bit of history.
Okay.
So Pink Floyd started in 65, which I think most people think of them as a 70s band, but they actually started in the 60s. They had their biggest hits in the 70s, of course, and into the early 80s. In 65, they started. There were four members in the band originally. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of interesting when you talk about the lineup of Pink Floyd, because there's been a lot of drama and changes in the lineup, but it's only five guys who have been in the band in their history.
Really?
Yeah. So usually you think there's like a lot of different guys in bands like this.
Yeah.
But there have only been five different members of Pink Floyd, and for most of their history, it was the same four guys. So it started out in 1965. The lead singer and guitarist was named Syd Barrett.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had Nick Mason, who was the drummer. Roger Waters, probably one of the best known, if not the best known member of the band, was the bass player and also sang some of the songs. And Richard Wright was the keyboard player.
Right.
Now, in the early days, they were called the T-Set.
That
was their original name. Very British sounding.
Right. You know,
that is definitely a British sounding name. So apparently one day they were going to play at a club and there was another band there already playing with the name the T-Set.
Okay.
I don't know how you come up with two bands with the name the T-Set.
That's not a great name, by the way, but okay. Yeah,
but, you know, apparently they thought it was. So they had, at the last minute, they had to change the name of the band. And Syd Barrett, who was the original founding member of the band, was a fan of a couple of blues guys. One of them was named Pink, and one of them was named Floyd.
No way.
So he put that together. Both their last names, and they became Pink Floyd. And it was like not a lot of thought, very last minute, but here they are with this legendary name, of course, Pink Floyd.
Right. Wow.
So they started out, like I said, in the mid-60s, and they were very early on, they were very much a psychedelic kind of band, like a very 60s kind of sounding band, very hippie kind of stuff. Very, very psychedelic. And Syd Barrett, the original founding member, was basically the driving force of the band.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote most of the songs, if not all of them, on the first album. And then in the 60s, you know, they were doing a lot of drugs.
Yeah.
At some point, Syd Barrett had a breakdown.
Oh.
And this is kind of an interesting thing, because the band takes a turn at this moment, and he had, and nobody really knows exactly what happened to this guy.
It could have been like a permanent trip. Remember hearing about those?
Yep. This might be one of the places where that story started.
Yeah.
Because he took a lot of LSD apparently in the 60s. And the story goes that like he went away for a weekend with his girlfriend and came back and he was a totally different person.
Oh, wow.
And, like, it dramatically changed his personality. And he was, like, a very bright and outgoing guy. And then he just became very quiet. And all the people who knew him at that time talk about how his eyes used to sparkle. And then after this, like, change in him, he had, like, blank, dead eyes.
Yeah. Yeah, could have took like, some bad drugs. Was it?
You don't know. Yeah, you know, and there's a lot of theories. You know, some people think you know he may have had mental issues on top of that, and then you know with the drugs amplified that. And, you know, he had some kind of breakdown, whether it be you know mental or drugs or a combination of the two. So they recorded their first album before this happened. Pipers at the Gates of Dawn was the name of their first album. It came out in 1968. It was pretty successful. They were doing pretty well. Then they were working on their second album, and they were touring and doing a lot of stuff. And this is when this guy, Syd Barrett, has his breakdown. And he kind of, you know, they go on tour, and he's, like, just standing on stage, not, like, playing his guitar, not singing. You know, and they were like, you know, like on American Bandstand, and he was not like responding. It was really, really bizarre. And it was kind of a disaster. Their first tour of the U.S., they were opening for Jimi Hendrix. You know, they just like basically he would just go on stage sometime and strum one note over and over again.
And they probably that needed that instrument, right?
He was their singer and guitarist. He was like the main guy.
Oh, wow.
So they had all kinds of problems. Sometimes he just wouldn't show up. Sometimes he would, you know, just look away from the audience or wander off stage. And they had all these problems with him. There was one time, there's an infamous time where he put a bunch of Brill Cream, the hair product, in his hair before a gig. And he was under a bright lights, you know, the stage lights. And it started melting. And they said he looked like he was literally a melting candle on stage. And he was just standing there while this was happening. And the audience was kind of freaking out because it looked like something was wrong. Yeah. So they had all these kinds of problems. So the band decided to bring in another guitar player to kind of back him up.
Oh, they didn't kick him out. They didn't kick him out initially
because they thought he was their leader and their creative force. He wrote all the songs. They wanted to make it work because he was, you know, he was their guru. He was the guy who, you know, was their leader. So they brought in another guitarist named Dave Gilmore, who, of course, is the fifth member of Pink Floyd. And eventually, when they become four again after Syd Barrett leaves, he's with the band the rest of the way.
Right.
And what's kind of interesting is Dave Gilmore and Syd Barrett were childhood friends, like before Pink Floyd.
Oh, did he have anything to do with him coming on board or?
Kind of, you know, like he was just in the circle, you know, him, you know, because he was friends with Syd Barrett. So they asked him to join the band. And so for a very brief period of time, there were five people in the band. And then the story goes that like one time, like the band was getting very frustrated and sick of dealing with Barrett. So the story goes that one time they were driving to a gig. And they picked up all the band members picked each other up. They're in this van driving to the thing, and they're supposed to go to Syd Barrett's house to pick him up. And they just kind of look at each other and just say, why bother? And they don't pick him up. And that's kind of the beginning of the end of Syd Barrett's career in Pink Floyd.
I wonder if he even knew they didn't pick him up.
That's like another thing that's really debated a lot. You know, a lot of people just say it didn't quite register what was going on. Because one of the band members, I believe it was Nick Mason, the drummer of the band, was actually like a roommate of Syd Barrett's and went back to the apartment after the gig. And like, he's like, oh, where were you? And he's like, oh, I had to get cigarettes. And he's like, okay. And he didn't even like register what was going on. So for a while they thought like maybe they would just tour without him, but he could still like be a creative force behind the band, writing music. Kind of like when we talked about the Beach Boys, what they did with Brian Wilson, very similar situation.
So was writing music at this point?
He was still writing music on and off. And they went back and forth, and they started working on their second album. He wrote a couple of songs for that, and on that album, all five members play, and that's the only album that has all five members on it. And then the story goes that one time he came into the studio with the band, and he said, you know, I got a new song. We're going to work on this new song. And the name of the song was Have You Got It Yet?
Okay.
So he like taught he's like, okay, here's the song, and the other band member's like, okay, we're going to play this song. And they start playing it. And then in the middle of the song, Syd Barrett changes the song. And they get all confused and they mess up the song. So he's like, all right, let's take it from the top. And they keep doing this, and he kept changing it every time he played it. And he was playing a joke on him. The joke was, have you got it yet? And like it took the band a while for them to – and they're like, well, this guy is either a genius or insane or a little bit of both. And they just said, you know what? All right, we can't do this anymore. This is not going to work. You
it's kind of like Andy Kaufman, how he just did the joke for himself.
Yes. Yep.
No
yep,
one else
yep.
got it.
He had his own little thing going on in his head. And you know, he basically, you know, at that point, they decided that, you know, they're going to move on without him. And there was other things going on. They changed management and stuff like that. So Sid Barrett is removed from the band sometime around 68 or
so. Oh, wow. It was early.
Yeah, yeah. So he only did the one album with them completely. And then he was a little bit on the second album. And they were, you know, they decided to move on. So at that point, they went on with the four of them, with David Gilmour replacing him in the band with Roger Waters and Nick Mason and Richard Wright in the band. And that was the core of Pink Floyd for most of what we know Pink Floyd as.
Right.
Those four guys. So after Sid Barrett left the band for a few years from like 68 to like 73, they put out albums. They were successful, but they weren't like mega hit albums. Mm. You know, they had a following. They were, you know, definitely charting and stuff like that, but they really hadn't broken through big time.
Mm-hmm.
Then in 1973, they start recording an album called Dark Side of the Moon.
Okay.
This album becomes the biggest selling album of all time. It's just a monster hit album.
So who was the driving force behind that album?
It was mostly Roger Waters. Okay. Roger Waters kind of took – David Gilmour was very involved. The two of them were kind of like the co-leaders.
Okay.
But Roger Waters kind of – and we're going to get more into this as we go along. Roger Waters kind of took over the band as time went on.
Right.
But and the other two guys were, you know, involved creatively, too. You know, they definitely, you know, played their part. But Roger Waters really kind of David Gilmour is known for his guitar. A lot of the when you listen to a Pink Floyd and you hear those wailing guitar sounds, that's David Gilmour. And that's, you know, that's like a signature Pink Floyd sound. And that is definitely part of, you know, the Pink Floyd experience.
Mm-hmm.
But so Dark Side of the Moon becomes this monster album, breakthrough album. You know, it's in a, you know, it's a legendary album cover, the light prism, you know, their t-shirts. Everybody still wears the t-shirt with that on it. And it was, if you smoked pot in high school, this was the album you listened to.
Right.
You know, because
in the 70s, I mean, perfect timing, right?
Yep,
it was just like a soundtrack.
Exactly. So there's this whole like, they become superstars at this point, mega stars, headliner, you know, biggest band in the world at the time, you know, as big as anybody else out there. What's interesting about the Dark Side of the Moon is the whole Wizard of Oz connection.
Now, which I've actually never done still.
It's interesting. What's fascinating about this, when the album came out, it was 73.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody had videotapes in 73 of The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, yeah.
You know, how did you do this? But the story goes that the Dark Side of the Moon syncs up with the movie The Wizard of Oz.
Yes. I've heard it.
Yeah, there's some clips of it. You can find them on YouTube. Some people have, you know, put clips of it on. And there are parts that do really kind of go.
Right.
I mean, definitely, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, you could see that. You know, there's like a part where Dorothy is like listening to the chest of the Tin Man. And there's actually on the album, there's a heartbeat at that point.
You know? Okay.
And there's when she's running, there's, you know, they're talking about running. And, you know, it definitely sings. But, of course, an album is much shorter than a movie.
Yeah.
So, you know, it kind of runs out of steam like about halfway through.
And also, I thought you had to start the album and the movie at very specific
points. Yeah, I think there was the roar of the lion at the beginning, you know, the MGM, you know, the old movies, they had the lion's head that came out. And I think you were like supposed to start like on the second roar or something like that. And with that, it synced up. But again, nobody knew this at the time. This was not a thing in the 70s because people didn't have the Wizard of Oz in their home. You know, they couldn't do this kind of thing. So it really started becoming a story in the 90s.
Oh.
Well later, like in 1993, apparently, somebody like first like put this out there. And, you know, it became, you know, an urban legend. And like I said, there are definitely parts of the album that do sync up with The Wizard of Oz. And they're both kind of they have a similar kind of vibe.
Yeah. And I wonder, you know, if the band ever addressed it. I didn't look it up.
They have been asked.
Yeah.
And they say no.
No. Right.
And they're like, no. You know, like, why would we do it with The Wizard of Oz? You know, why would, you know, that's not like anything, you know, we would think of. And again, like at the time that the album was recorded, there was no way people could have done this.
Right.
So why would they be doing that?
So it was just somebody who was like, oh, this, you know,
somebody who was in a very relaxed frame of mind, let's say, and just happened to be flipping through the channels and the Wizard of Oz was playing while this was, and he just said, hey, this is kind of cool, and figured it out. You know, it's like there's a lot of myths in rock and roll, and this is this is one of the bigger ones. And again, it's very interesting how it started, like it became a legend well after the time, you know, well after it came out. You know, The Wizard of Oz came out in the 30s, the album came out in the 70s, and people didn't start talking about this till like the 90s. So it's really very, very bizarre.
Well, that was like before the internet explosion, so
right,
it's like, let's take this, put it with this, see what happens.
Right, right, exactly. How do you go viral in that day and age? You know, it's kind of interesting. But so that's, you know, that was the Dark Side of the Moon again.
You have watched it and you've done it?
I've never actually tried it myself, but like I said, there are you can find videos of it and websites that talk about it. There are whole websites dedicated to it where they like break down like each little bit of the song and what it means connected to the Wizard of Oz. It's fascinating.
Yeah.
And there is definitely something there, you know, whether it's coincidental or it was planned. They're definitely, it's like the Paul McCartney is dead rumor with the Beatles stuff. Uh-huh. There's all kinds of stuff. If you do look at it, there is some interesting stuff there that does kind of work, but then there's parts of it that kind of break down.
Right.
And we'll do a Paul McCartney is dead episode at some point, as I got things to say about that. But anyway, so Dark Side of the Moon comes, you know, on the Billboard charts for decades. It was like one of the longest running in the top 20 Billboard countdown for like 30 years or something like that. Amount. It was on the charts and multi-platinum, all-time best-selling album. So now, all of a sudden, they were this band that was like a cool little rock band having their cult following. Now they're the biggest band in the world.
Right. So some egos are getting into play.
Some egos are going big. And there's a lot of pressure on the band, too. Because record label's like, okay, we need another album like that.
Right.
So they start working on the next album, which was called Wish You Were Here.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, there's like three or four albums in a row of Pink Floyd, from Dark Side of the Moon to Wish You Were Here to Animals to The Wall. Those four albums were done from like 73 to 79, and that was like their four studio albums.
Yeah.
And that's like the bulk of most of what people know about Pink Floyd.
Mm-hmm.
That was all their big songs are on there. And, you know, all the ones that people know, you know, Money and Wish You Were Here, Shine On Your Crazy Diamond, all that kind of stuff, Another Brick in the Wall. That's where all that was. So that was kind of the meat of their superstar years.
Pretty good run to have
an incredible run, you know, four legendary albums.
Especially at that time when they were probably, you know, relied on themselves to write. It wasn't probably writers. I mean,
it was just the four guys, up with this stuff, you know. And it was definitely, you know, an incredibly creative period they were going through.
Mm-hmm.
So they start working on the next album in 75, Wish You Were Here, which is personally my favorite Pink Floyd album. So obviously it's got the song Wish You Were Here.
Yeah, great song.
And Shine On You Crazy Diamond, which is one that people probably know. And that song, I believe, is 12 minutes long, the full version of it.
Jeez.
And it's about – that song happens to be about Syd Barrett.
Oh.
And they're talking about their old bandmate that, you know, what happened to him, you know, that he kind of, you know, lost his mind, you know, and they lost him as a person.
Right.
So in 1975, they're working on the album. They're in Abbey Road Studios in London, recording it, and they're working on the song Shine On You Crazy Diamond. So everybody's in the studio. There's a couple of producers in there. The band is in there, and, you know, roadies or whatever. And this guy wanders in, and he's kind of a fat guy, bald, and, like, he just kind of sits in the corner and starts brushing his teeth. Like, he takes out a toothbrush and starts, not with any water or toothpaste, is just brushing his teeth with a toothbrush.
Hmm.
And everybody's looking around and like, who is this guy? What, you know, is he some, you know, is he a homeless guy who just wandered in the street? Does he work for the studio? Does anybody know who this is? It was Syd Barrett.
Of course.
The band member who, you know, who was their mate and they grew up with and knew all this time. They did not recognize him at first. Because he put on a tremendous amount of weight.
Right.
And this is only about 5 years after, like, the last time they worked with him. five or six years later.
So they hadn't seen him? That was it?
He did a couple of solo albums that he tried to put out that David Gilmour and Roger Waters helped him on the solo albums, like they produced it. But that was like a whole other thing and a nightmare kind of thing because, again, he was very difficult to like do a traditional album with, to like sit down, write a song, play a song, do it again, 12 times to make an album. It was torturous for them. And like after a while, the record company's like, we can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
And what he's producing is bizarre and you know, nobody's interested in it. So he kind of stepped away from music. And he just kind of showed up. And so like they were sitting there for a while. And the guy was there for a while before they realized who he was.
Did he know what he was doing?
Again, we don't really know what was in his head.
Seems like he's having a good time with himself.
Yeah, exactly. He was in his own world. So eventually they realized who it was. They started talking to him. And, you know, they said like, oh, what do you think of the song? Which was about him.
Wow.
A song. I mean, how bizarre is it? They were working on a song about him and he comes into the studio just out of the blue. I mean, there's something going on another
level.
Yeah,
seriously.
There's some interesting stuff. So they asked him what he thought of it. He said the quote he's credited with saying was, it sounds kind of old. And, you know, whatever that means, you know, it sounded old fashioned or whatever, right. You know, he just, and they're like, okay, you know, and so they were having a party actually, because they were finishing up the album and David Gilmour actually had just gotten married and they were having like a little party at the studio to celebrate his marriage and to celebrate the album being done. And so Syd Barrett was there and they said, he just wandered out and that was it.
That was the last of it?
They never saw him again.
Wow.
They never saw him again.
So creepy and odd.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just like, you know, he just appeared this one day.
Right.
When they were, again, writing a song about him, working on a song about him, Shine On You Crazy Diamond. And he just kind of, you know, looked bizarre. And, you know, they said they were literally in tears when they saw him because he just looked so bad. You know, he looks, and there are pictures of him from that day. And you can see him and he looks kind of like Uncle Fester from the Addams Family kind of thing. He had shaved off all his hair, including his eyebrows.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah, which is actually a scene in the movie The Wall. There's a scene where the character shaves off his eyebrows, and that's actually about Syd Barrett as well, you know, kind of thing.
Well, they didn't chase him and find out what's going on.
No, they just kind of like let him go, you know, kind of thing. And so the band has been criticized, like maybe you should have tried to do more to help this guy. But also, you know, like Syd Barrett's family says, you know, nobody could have helped him.
Yeah, right.
You know, and, you know, so some people do criticize them. They're like, oh, well, they just cut them loose because they were concerned about their careers, which they definitely were.
Yeah.
You know, they were just kind of getting their foothold as a legitimate rock band and making money, making music. And he was kind of jeopardizing it by being, you know, out of his mind. You know, so you can understand where they were coming from a self-preservation point
of view. Sure, and you can't expect them to like go down with the ship, you know?
Right. And he was never destitute because he got royalties from their first couple of albums. So he always had an income coming in from the band, too. But, you know, it is kind of interesting that, like, you know, he just this one day, the last time they saw him was this one day, just so bizarre.
So weird.
Yeah, so, you know, so Syd Barrett spent the rest of his life living with his mother.
Oh, okay.
Never got married, you know, and he did some painting, but he never really did anything, like he never had a job because he never needed to have a job.
Yeah.
He worked in the garden at the house. It was a very modest house, not like a mansion or anything like that. Just like a house in the neighborhood. He passed away in 2006. He had some health issues. Again, he was very overweight after he left the band and he put on all this weight and he probably was diabetic and had some health issues. So he passed away in 2006. And again, fans would occasionally go up to him and like seek him out, like hardcore Pink Floyd fans and stuff like that. And he just basically didn't respond to people.
Something happened that weekend.
Yeah.
They should investigate.
It's fascinating. It really is. You know, it's right out of, you know, this bizarre, you know, story that you really.
Yeah.
And it's interesting if you're a fan of Pink Floyd, like I said, you probably know the music later after him.
Right.
So it's like this whole chapter at the beginning of the band that a lot of fans don't even know about.
Yeah.
You know, but influenced them considerably because a lot of the songs on Dark Side of the Moon and Wish You Were Here and the wall deal with, you know, people having drug problems and mental issues.
Right.
There's a lot of that in Pink Floyd music, and a lot of that is about Syd Barrett.
Right. So he became much more of an influence than he was almost when he was in the band. Right?
It really is. It's very interesting. It is very interesting.
Yeah.
So Wish You Were Here comes out. Big hit album. They tour the world again. And a lot of the stuff on Dark Side of the Moon and Wish You Were Here does talk about, like, the record business too, and how, like, it's a lot of pressure. Mm-hmm. and there's a lot of different themes in Pink Floyd music that are recurring, like, throughout their career.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, what they're talking about. Like I said, they talk a lot about mental illness.
Right.
They talk a lot about, like, the business of music kind of crushing the artistry of music.
Mm-hmm.
And they very much were in that mode at that point. You know, they just become this big thing.
Right.
You know, this big industry unto themselves, you know, touring the world, putting out these albums. So they put out the next album, Animals, which that one is very famous for the flying pig on the cover of the album.
Yeah, right.
And they used to have a big inflatable pig at their concerts that mm-hmm. they would hover over the stage. And one time that broke loose, actually, when they were doing the album cover, it was a big inflatable pig. It's like over a factory on the album cover. And it actually broke loose, and it was like an aviation hazard and stuff like that. And it had to be, like, you know, shot down or something. It's just,
you know,
almost like a Spinal Tap kind of moment for the band with that. So after Animals, they work on The Wall.
Right.
Which, you know, if you've seen the movie or you heard the, I think my first time remembering a Pink Floyd song was Another Brick in the Wall, which is, of course, the song about not needing no education.
Right.
And I think every kid in grade school at one point, that was their favorite song.
Because, of course.
Because school sucks, and this was the anthem, you know.
And the teachers, that was when teachers had authority. Now it's like.
Yeah, that's true. You know, the teacher yelling at you, and don't, you can't have your meat if you don't, you can't have your pudding if you don't eat your meat.
Right.
You know?
They had much more influence over the kids. But I actually saw Roger Waters, The Wall, in Nassau Coliseum. He was by himself.
Right,
at that point.
Yeah.
The theatrics. It was like watching a Broadway show.
Oh, yeah.
It was just spectacular. The Wall came. Did you see that show?
Yeah, I didn't see it live, but I have seen it.
Clips it was amazing.
Of it. Yeah. They were known throughout their career, even in the early days with Syd Barrett in the 60s, of putting on a show.
Yeah.
They had, like, a very elaborate light show and very psychedelic light show. And again, you know, if you're looking at a lava lamp and listening to Dark Side of the Moon and enjoying a little bit of nature, shall we say,
mm-hmm.
it's definitely put you in that mindset, you know. And a lot of their music has that vibe to it. And the idea for The Wall was Roger Waters, again, getting frustrated with the audience. When they were touring for their previous album before The Wall, Animals, there was an incident where a fan, like, spit at Roger Waters
and
threw a bottle at him, and he got annoyed. So he's like, you know, I just want to build a wall between me and the audience. And they literally do that on that tour. They build a wall between him and the audience. It's crazy.
It was so awesome. And I actually wasn't a big Pink Floyd fan. I just got the tickets for my husband, and I left there, like, just blown away. I was like,
right. No, it's definitely
just
it's definitely something. It's definitely something. So they work on The Wall. That comes out in 1979. It's a double album, which was pretty unusual in those days. There weren't too many bands that would put out a double album. And they were concept albums. Most of their albums are concept. And again, it was the story of Pink Floyd was he loses his dad in the war. Then he becomes a rock star. He gets disillusioned with being a rock star, and he feels isolated. Basically, it's Roger Waters telling you his life story.
Right.
Because, you know, it's very much that. And Roger Waters, basically, at this point, has taken over the band.
Yeah, that's right.
And so David Gilmour is getting more disenfranchised. He doesn't really have many singing parts or writing credits on The Wall. Richard Wright gets so disillusioned. He was the keyboard player, and again, an original member of the band, and he would write some music too. He actually gets fired from the band while they're making The Wall.
Oh, no.
Which, again, this is a founding member, and they just said, like, no, you're not contributing. We don't want you in the band anymore. He would kind of come back and forth into the band. They actually, when they went on tour, they hired him as a contract player to play with the band because they figured, like, oh, fans are going to want to see him. So he wasn't technically a part of Pink Floyd, but he was touring with Pink Floyd. And one of the things that's interesting about the Dark Side of the Moon, The Wall tour, the original one they did in the 80s, late 70s, early 80s, is the tour lost a lot of money because they did this elaborate show.
Oh, right. I'm sure.
It was so expensive to put on. So Richard Wright always jokes that he was the only one who made money on that tour because they had to pay him a salary. And you know, the rest of the band lost money.
Yeah, he so it's like
he didn't get a cut, but there was no cut to get. The cut was debt. So he actually made out okay on the deal. So then in a couple of years later, they do the movie Pink Floyd, The Wall, which is definitely just a trippy kind of thing. It's Bob Geldof actually stars in that movie.
Yeah.
Bob Geldof, best known, of course, for Live Aid.
Yeah.
It's interesting because he was a rock star, too, but he's playing Pink Floyd. He's actually playing a character named Pink. You know, there's a classic line in the song Money, by the way, which one's Pink? There was no Pink Floyd in Pink Floyd. But he actually played a Pink Floyd was the character's name in the movie.
That's funny. I've never seen it.
And the movie is, if you're watching it straight, you're not going to understand any of it.
Really?
Yeah. It definitely, again, there is some mind-altering goodness to watching a Pink Floyd movie or listening to a Pink Floyd album. You really kind of have to be in a different headspace than your normal space to enjoy some of this stuff.
I wonder when they're writing it, if they're straight or they're just like stream of conscious.
You know, I don't know. You know, yeah. From what I understand, Roger Waters has said he was never really did a lot of drugs.
Right. That's what I heard.
So it's interesting, you know, but they're definitely, the drugs are definitely a soundtrack to some of the stuff or their music is a soundtrack to it. So then they do their next album, which, you know, was their last album with Roger Waters. And that was The Final Cut was the name of it, very appropriately. They got into, again, it was just really a Roger Waters solo album and the other guys were kind of just playing on it.
Okay.
So at this point, Roger Waters actually gets annoyed with the rest of the band. You would think the band would get annoyed with Roger Waters, but it was turned out it was the other way around. He got sick of the band. He's like, I'm doing all the work. I might as well just go solo.
Oh.
So he quit the band in 82, I believe it was. And he left the band, went solo. So the other guys who were still in the band, which was David Gilmour and Nick Mason, the drummer.
Right.
They decide to continue on as Pink Floyd.
Right, because they have the name, right?
Right. And
that's part of it.
Well, that was a big debate, too, because Roger Waters said, you know, I have the name. You can't do that.
Right.
So they started suing each other. So Roger, and basically it was Roger Waters versus David Gilmour, because they're just countersuing each other, who has the right to Pink Floyd. So eventually the lawsuit gets settled and David Gilmour gets the rights to the name. They put out a couple of albums after Roger Waters left the band, and actually Richard Wright comes back into the band at this point.
Okay.
And so it's the three of the four members who, you know, had been there since the early days are doing it. And Roger Waters is doing his solo stuff. And, you know, his solo stuff has a very Pink Floyd vibe to it, too, you know. And at one point, Roger Waters put out a solo album and Pink Floyd put out an album called The Division Bell. And Roger Waters put out an album called Radio Waves. And they were touring at the same time.
Oh,
and, like, they were literally kind of, like, going into the same cities at the same time at times. They were kind of, like, crossing paths. And Pink Floyd did much better in terms of audience. Like, Pink Floyd was playing stadiums, and Roger Waters was playing little arenas.
I sort of remember that, but who has the rights to play the Pink Floyd?
They can both play the songs.
Okay, they both can.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, and they both do, and or have in concert.
Right.
So, but that just annoyed Roger Waters to no end, because he was just like, you know, I hate these guys now kind of thing.
Right.
So they eventually did get back together at one point and play live together at Live 8.
Mm-hmm.
Which was back in 2008, I believe, or 2007, I think it was. And so that was the first time in decades that they had played together. And it was all four of the surviving members. You know, Syd Barrett obviously wasn't there. I think he had passed away already at that point. But it was the four members who are still, you know, were still around, and the core four members of Pink Floyd.
Right.
And then they, there was talk like, oh, are they going to tour? And they were offered, you know, boatloads of money.
Yeah.
To get back together and tour, but they didn't. And, you know, David Gilmour kind of stepped away from doing Pink Floyd stuff. You know, they did a couple albums after Roger Waters, but they were spread out over years.
Right.
And it wasn't the same. You know, it was definitely, you know, they definitely passed by. And there's been still a lot of bad blood between Gilmore and Waters. They've sniped at each other a little bit here and there. And most recently, they actually David Gilmore put out a song called "Hey Hey Rise Up," and it was support of the people in the Ukraine.
Oh, okay.
And it was he called it Pink Floyd, even though it was really just him. Mm-hmm. I think maybe Nick Mason was on the track, but you know, it wasn't really. Roger Waters was livid about that, and politically, they have very different opinions on the war in the Ukraine.
Right, right.
And you know, and Roger Waters has had some controversies over some of his political opinions.
Yeah, I feel like he was political at the show I saw too. He's known for that.
Some people accuse him of being anti-Semitic because he's not a big fan of Israel.
Right.
And there's a whole lot of stuff. And, you know, his politics are his politics, whatever that is. But, you know, so they don't get along on that level politically either.
Okay.
So that doesn't help the situation.
So to take the name Pink Floyd and put it towards a political.
Yeah. Kind of yeah. So that's, you know, things. It's there's a lot of issues there. And they. You know, and it's funny because they're the two main guys from the band, and they're still around, and they're still making music.
Yeah.
But I don't think you're ever going to see them making music together again.
No, what a shame.
Yeah, it is. It kind of is. You know, it definitely – the band had really – again, they had that peak from like the mid-70s to the early 80s where they were just insanely – productive and
amazing.
Yeah, they
could do nothing wrong, right? That's right. What happened to the Beatles too. You peaked too soon, and it just all falls apart.
Yep. It's, you know, it's all in all, it's just another brick in the wall. Thank you for listening to The Last Radio Show. If you like the show, please subscribe to the podcast and leave us a review on your favorite platform. You can check us out on Facebook and Instagram at The Last Radio Show. We will talk to you soon.
The Last Radio Show.
The Last Radio Show.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.